Also, thank you to Justin and to the rest of the organizers for having me. It's been a real pleasure. So I'm going to tell you about how much you can trust the galaxies. This is mostly based on a recent paper of mine, which you can find here. So I'm just going to give a quick overview of what we're hoping to learn from the galaxies,
and then talk about the methods that I've been using to figure out what kind of systematics we need to take into account, and summarize my results, and then talk about the implications of this in terms of doing cosmology. All right, so what are we hoping to learn from galaxies? Most of you probably are familiar with this, but we haven't heard too much about galaxies so far at this conference. We've heard a lot about using the CMB and supernovae for doing cosmology. Galaxy surveys are one of the major tools, so we're talking about using the distribution of galaxies to trace the large-scale structure of the universe and measure the power spectrum of the matter distribution, which depends on cosmological parameters. So here's just a picture of what information we're extracting from the galaxy distribution. So it's just P of K. And just to give a quick sense of how these depend on cosmological parameters, here's some movies that are on my advisor Max Tegmark's website. They're a little bit out of date now since this is the first year WMAP data up here, and some older SDSS data for the power spectrum here. But this just gives you some movies for, So let's take an example of changing the baryon fraction. You can see how this affects both the CMB power spectrum and the matter power spectrum. Basically, the idea is to combine these two pieces of information to get rid of the degeneracies and all the different parameters in order to measure all the parameters that we can. So one of the major pieces of what we don't know about how to do cosmology with the galaxies is we need to assume something about how the galaxies trace the dark matter. The basic, most simple assumption that's most commonly used is to assume deterministic linear bias, which basically translates into a normalization factor for the power spectrum. So this is parameter B that's often used as one of the parameters in these cosmological models. You can see all it is a normalization for this power spectrum. But bias could, in principle, be much more complicated than that. It could also have a scale dependence, so it could depend on K. It could be nonlinear, or it could be stochastic, and I'll explain a little bit about what those mean later on. So the method that I'm using to get a handle on what the bias is doing is to use relative bias, because it's hard to measure the dark matter directly. So it's hard to measure how the galaxies are related to the dark matter exactly. So I'm looking at relative bias. The basic idea is to compare bias between different types of galaxies, so bright galaxies versus dim galaxies, red galaxies versus blue galaxies. The idea, of course, being that if they're perfectly correlated with the dark matter, then they should be perfectly correlated with each other as well. And so this gives us a sense of the size scale where we have to start worrying about the effects of astrophysics. It also galaxies, the bias depends on luminosity, and so if you have a flux-limited galaxy survey, you need to make a correction for this effect in order to measure the power spectrum accurately. So we want to get a function of the bias as a function of luminosity as well. Also, another piece of physics that we get out of this is we learn something about the galaxy formation that's actually causing all of this different relative bias. So just a quick summary of the framework that I'm using here. We're relating the relative overdensities between two types of galaxies. You just want to think of each of these deltas as just being a random field in three-dimensional space. And so we want to say we know the field of type 1 galaxies. How can we infer the field of a different type of galaxies. So the deterministic linear bias just says we multiply that field by a factor b, and basically what this translates to physically is that you can have your type 2 galaxies be either clumpier or less clumpy than your type 1, but their peaks and valleys of the distribution coincide. So this is maybe not necessarily the case. We could also imagine a distribution that has some offset, a little bit more randomness in the distribution. The peaks and valleys don't quite line up. This is what I refer to as stochastic bias, that we need to have an additional randomness in the distribution to really go from one type to the other. This is stochastic linear bias. You can also have nonlinear bias. What that means is you take this b, rather than being a constant, you make it a function of delta 1. Turns out that that's experimentally difficult to distinguish from this stochastic bias, so I'm just going to refer to stochasticity in the rest of the talk, but that is really both encapsulating stochasticity or nonlinearity in this bias parameterization. So here, just defining the basic parameters that I'm going to be measuring. If you take the autocorrelation of your type 2 galaxies, you get the correlation of type 1 galaxies multiplied by B rel squared, and the cross correlation is B rel times R rel. This R is the parameter that has the information about the stochasticity in it. If R is equal to 1, then you have this deterministic bias case. And if you have stochasticity or nonlinearity, then you'll get an R of less than 1. All right, so on to the methods that I'm using to do this. I'm analyzing the SDSS DR5 galaxies. And to get a sense of the luminosity dependence, I'm splitting this up into luminosity bins. So this is just a histogram showing the distance versus the co-moving density of galaxies in each of the luminosity bins. You'll see that dark red, those are the dimmest galaxies, and so we can only see those close to us. And the brightest galaxies, we're only using the ones that are furthest away from us. We're making volume-limited samples here. And you'll notice from this that each of the neighboring samples in luminosity bin overlap with its nearest neighbors in physical space. So these are the dimmest galaxies in the sample, and they overlap with the second dimmest galaxies in the sample in this region called V1, and so forth. We define the regions that I'm going to be comparing these different galaxies in. So the idea of doing this sort of very careful comparison is that we want to be comparing galaxies in the same physical space, so we don't have to worry about cosmic variance, and we don't have to worry about that we're mistaking evolution for luminosity-dependent bias, for example. So this really gives you a very clean way to measure luminosity dependence bias. So within each of these different comparison volumes, we're going to measure the bias between the bright dim galaxies and also between red and blue galaxies, and then test this bias for stochasticity and scale dependence. So in each of the volumes, we're going to make 4 pairwise comparisons. So here's just a picture of it in physical space. This is galaxies in the dimmer bin and in the brighter bin. You can see the fainter gray spots are the dimmer galaxies. The bigger black spots are the brighter galaxies, and we're comparing them in this region where the volumes overlap. Then we can do the same kind of comparison, except compare red versus blue galaxies. So we're again comparing them in the same region, except we're splitting them up by color rather than by luminosity. Just a note on that, the red and blue galaxies is just kind of a simple first approximation of dividing the galaxies into two physically distinct categories. We have, on the one hand, red elliptical passive galaxies, and on the other hand, blue spiral star-forming galaxies. And you can split this up in a number of complicated ways to try to really understand the physics, but this is basically the simplest possible heuristic for dividing galaxies into two categories. They've been corrected to their rest frame colors. All right, and so then we take just the red galaxies and do the same luminosity-dependent splitting, take the dimmer red galaxies and the brighter red galaxies and find the luminosity dependence of the bias for that, and do the same thing with the blue galaxies, and then repeat this in each of the overlapping volumes. So I'm just going to show this four-frame plot in a couple slides, and I show the results. So we have the all galaxies luminosity dependence, the all galaxies split up by red and blue, the luminosity dependence of red galaxies, and the luminosity dependence of blue galaxies. And the way that I'm measuring the bias is, first of all, basically I'm using this technique called counts in cells. The idea is very simple. Just split up your volume into little cubes, and then count the number of galaxies of each type in each of your little cubes, and then do some statistical analysis on that. You can find the scale dependence by changing the size of your cubes. So that's the basic idea of the counts and cells analysis. Then once you have the counts and cells numbers, I've applied two different techniques to analyze this. The first is this null buster test. This is something that Max Tegmark developed several years ago now. This is a generalized chi-squared statistic. The idea is you want to come up with the most sensitive test to rule out this hypothesis of deterministic linear bias. And so the output of this test is a number that tells you basically the number of sigmas at which you can rule out this null hypothesis. The second method I use is just a maximum likelihood fit to measure these two bias parameters I mentioned earlier, BREL and RREL. The deterministic linear bias, again, we expect to find R equal to 1. If for stochastic bias, we expect R to be less than 1. All right, so what are the results that I get? This is a plot of the measurement of the relative bias using the null buster method, showing the luminosity-dependent bias for all galaxies, the color-dependent bias, luminosity-dependent for red galaxies and for blue galaxies. It's a little hard to interpret exactly what the locations of these lines mean. This is a plot of the cell size versus the relative bias in each volume. So, for example, one of these lines here is saying for the galaxies in volume V6, which is comparing the brightest and second brightest galaxy samples, the relative bias between those two samples lies right here. So that it's a little hard to interpret physically, but the main thing you're supposed to get out of this graph is that all of these lines look pretty much horizontal as a function of scale. So we find that the relative bias does not show much scale dependence over the size scales that we're probing with our cells. So the physical information we want to get out of the locations of these lines is actually a function of bias versus luminosity. And so by taking the relative bias between each of the pairwise samples, we can extract out bias. Yeah? Oh, for the B number, it could be smaller or bigger than 1. That just depends on which galaxies you define as your type 1 or your type 2. And if you switch them around, then you'll just get the bias turns into 1 over B. So that the B parameter can be anything. It's the R parameter that's either 1 or less than 1. Okay, so here is a plot of the luminosity-dependent bias. If you're familiar with some of these power spectrum papers, you may have seen this before. So this is just showing the absolute magnitude of the galaxies versus the relative bias that we measure. And the points are showing my measurements for the luminosity-dependent bias for all galaxies. The black solid line is an empirical fit using a formula from Norberg et al. 2001, which was a work done with the 2DF galaxy redshift survey. And my fit actually lines up almost exactly with the fit from that paper, so that's reassuring because it's done on different scales using a different survey, and so got this nice clean function. It's also a paper from Max, a power spectrum paper from 2004, which did the same thing using power spectrum methods. They found this dotted line, which is also pretty close. So this is in this function with the gradual increase below L star. This is right here is about the L star in the Schechter function, which is the luminosity of a typical galaxy. So for damaged galaxies, we have slight increase. Bias is a function of luminosity above L star. We increase the bias significantly. Okay, so this has been measured before. So
yeah.
And you said those two agreed?
So the dotted curve is from Hedmark. The dashed curve, which you actually can't see, is from Norberg et al. So there's a gray dashed curve on top of the black curve, which is hard to see in this plot. So those two agree perfectly. Hedmark is a little bit different from these, but yeah?
The difference doesn't, I mean, the difference isn't huge in the fourth thing. I mean,
right.
It looks like a big difference from just looking at the lines.
Yeah, I mean, but in terms of the actual data points, I mean, this it agrees with this point. These points are off by,
quite a few circles.
Well, this one's off by maybe a little more.
So what do you think is this source of the difference?
I'm not sure. I don't think that it's
a big enough difference to be too concerned about, since these were measured with very different techniques. What? Yeah, with the same data set using different techniques. But the piece that I've added now is to measure the same curve except for red and blue galaxies separately. I think this is a really interesting result because you can see they're qualitatively different. The red galaxies, the bias increases for both the bright galaxies and for dimmer galaxies, but the blue galaxies don't show very much luminosity dependence at all. And so this curve that people typically find it's something of a function of color selection at the different luminosities, because at lower luminosities you have mostly blue galaxies, and so you see this gradual dependence, and then at for brighter galaxies, they're mostly red, so you see this increase in scale dependence. So there's a lot more hidden information in what's going on in this luminosity-dependent curve. And the basic interpretation of why you see this difference is that the brightest red galaxies are the central galaxies in very massive halos, and the dimmest red galaxies are satellite galaxies in very massive halos. And the blue galaxies typically live in sort of medium mass halos that are basically more isolated. So that's the rough interpretation, although I think it's still not totally well understood exactly what's going on. All right, so results from the null buster test. This is the number that tells you how many sigma you can rule out the deterministic linear bias model. So this is a plot showing the shaded regions are plus or minus 2. So if you fall within the shaded region, then the deterministic linear bias model is good. So you can see from this plot, for all of the luminosity-dependent splittings, you're pretty much in good agreement with deterministic linear bias. However, for the color dependence, you're way off. The bias between red and blue galaxies, especially at small scales, cannot be explained by deterministic linear bias. We have to have some kind of stochasticity, something else going on. So red and blue galaxies are sampling different regions of the universe. And here is basically the same results using the likelihood method. Remember, measuring this R parameter, which is equal to 1 for deterministic linear bias. You can see this for all these cases, and less than 1 if you have stochasticity. So you can see below maybe 20 megaparsecs, you can see you get R becomes significantly less than 1 for the color-dependent splitting. And this is in good agreement with some previous results as well. So just to quickly summarize the results that we see here, the relative bias factor is not strongly scale dependent, down to scales of about 5 megaparsecs. The luminosity dependent bias strongly depends on color. We saw the splitting where the blue galaxies don't show much luminosity dependence in their bias, and bright and dim red galaxies are more biased than the average bright galaxy. And also for the deterministic linear bias model, we rule it out for color-dependent bias at smaller scales, but it's still a good fit for the luminosity-dependent bias. Okay, so what does all of this mean in terms of doing cosmology? And then now I'm going to shift gears a little bit and talk about a recent paper from Sanchez and Cole, where they calculate the power spectrum using exactly the same methods for the 2DF and SDSS data and check to see, do they agree with each other? Do they predict the same values for cosmological parameters? And if they don't agree, how can we understand what's causing the differences? Okay, so first of all, do they agree? Here we have the black points are the 2DF power spectrum and the red points are the SDSS power spectrum. And you can see that they don't quite match up. From this plot, SDSS looks like it has slightly less power on large scales, although I think it's a little clearer to think about in terms of the physics of what's actually going on. These two curves, just because of the way the analysis is done, are normalized. Their bias factors are normalized at this point, so of course they line up here. I think it may be clearer to imagine the SDSS points, if you shift them up, that they would have more power than 2DF at small scales. So you can think about this either way. The analysis doesn't tell you which of these physical effects is causing this difference in shape, but there's definitely a significant, maybe not huge, but there is definitely a difference in these two power spectra.
Those spins are a bit correlated.
Are they
very smooth?
Yeah, they are. The Monte Carlo Markov chain fits, of course, account for the full covariance matrix of all of these points.
If you shifted that up, it would seem like you would have lots of points with little error bars that wouldn't match, instead of the way you have it here, which is points with big error bars not matching. I mean, is that a function?
Yeah.
Is that the way to do the correlation? You see what I mean? So,
right,
that curve up the fifth would look a lot worse if you considered all those little noise and all those little error bars.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, it's really, the normalization is arbitrary anyway, to some extent, and so, doing it this way is, maybe it looks like it agrees a little better than it really does. It's hard to say. Yes?
Is there anyone to see these guys at the short wave thing? I mean, don't you think what you're plotting is the primordial path?
Yeah, I'm not sure. The CMB should come in, I guess, So I'm not sure if they must overlap a little bit like at the large scales. I'm not sure exactly where it comes in now.
So, if you cut for different types of galaxies, does this discrepancy remain?
This is an excellent question, and I will answer it in the next slide. I will answer it in two slides, in fact. So this is just showing the impact of on cosmological parameter fitting that this discrepancy causes. So this is a plot in the omega matter and baryon fraction plane with 1 and 2 sigma contours. So you can just see that there is some slight tension here, and the
1 sigma contours don't overlap. And so you predict a higher value of the baryon fraction from the 2DF galaxies than from SDSS. So this looks, well, you could maybe argue that this isn't so bad of disagreement, but we're going to tighten the parameter constraints further when we do future galaxy surveys. We really want to understand exactly what's causing the systematic effects. Okay, so what causes the problem? Could it be the different analysis techniques? Well, that was the whole point of the Sanchez and Cole work, to analyze the two surveys with exactly the same techniques. So no, it's not from that. Is it from large cosmic variance, since the two surveys are looking at slightly different areas in the universe? Well, Sanchez and Cole also did some tests in the region where the two surveys overlap, and decided no, it wasn't really that either. How about different color selection? The 2DF and SDSS surveys have slightly different biases in terms of how they select which galaxies they're including in the survey. 2DF, so this is a plot of the rest frame color. Bluer is down here, redder is over there. So you can see the 2DF galaxies have many more blue galaxies, and SDSS has more red galaxies. And given the differences between red and blue galaxies that I found, you might expect that this could cause some problems. So what they did to test this is they just analyzed the power spectrum using the red galaxies, which is exactly what is suggested by this gentleman here. And they find, yes, in fact, when you just analyze the red galaxies, you get much closer agreement in terms of the power spectrum. So indeed, the color selection of these two different surveys does make a difference in terms of measuring the cosmological parameters. So here is the same cosmological parameter fit using just the red galaxies, and you can see now these two are in excellent agreement. Yes. So the nonlinear correction is the one that's used in the Sanchez and Cole paper is the Cole-Imperial formula. So they're trying to explain this by using a different value of Q, but I'll get to that in the next slide, actually. So the effects that we're seeing with the SDSS having more power on large scales make sense in terms of what I've measured and in terms of the nonlinear evolution, because we expect the red galaxies to be in denser regions, which will have stronger effects from nonlinear evolution, which tends to boost the power at small scales. So this gives some qualitative understanding as to why SDSS has more small-scale powers, because it has more red galaxies, which have stronger nonlinear effects. Okay, so what can we do to fix it? As Niyash mentioned, there's converting the power spectrum that we predict from perturbation theory to account for nonlinear structure formation and evolution is a little tricky. So here's the linear theory. Cole and his collaborators have developed this formula to try to empirically account for the nonlinearities with this parameter Q. This B squared is just the usual bias parameter. Okay, I'll be done one more slide. Right, and so basically what they find is that just by using this model, they can't quite get the 2DF and SDSS to agree just by trying to give them a different value of Q. However, it does work for the SES LRGs, which is kind of an interesting result. So what I'm working on right now is to develop a parameterization for bias that can match my bias observations and to explain the differences between SESS and 2DF. I think is a really important thing to be doing because we want to be able to improve the parameter constraints that we're going to be measuring from future surveys. And here's just a summary of how much we can trust the galaxies. And since I've gotten my 0 minutes left, I'm going to stop here. Thank you.
Is this a linear thing? I mean, I was just thinking those two color distributions still look different in the details, and it seems like you have fairly sharp features in luminosity dependence, at least on the red galaxies. So I'm wondering, can you actually do something where you match the two samples? You know, you weight galaxies.
Yeah.
As a function of
there's
exactly the same.
So the method that is used by the work from Cole actually uses takes some of this into account by weighting different colors of galaxies. However, they use a formula for the luminosity dependence of the bias that doesn't match with the observations that I have from SDSS. And so I think that that could also contribute to some of the differences that they're seeing. It'd be interesting to redo the analysis with a better parameterization of luminosity dependent bias. I talked to Sean Cole about this, and he wasn't convinced that the luminosity dependence is going to make that much difference, but certainly it's something that is not quite accounted for
also,
in their analysis.
Just an additional question. Are there any catastrophic errors in the redshifts in the panel? Is it at all possible to scatter faint red galaxies from the nearby universe to higher redshifts through redshift errors? Do you know?
Not that I know of. I think that the spectra of the galaxies are fairly well understood.
I mean, they just
that
throw out anything that
yeah. If it doesn't look like a galaxy, then it's just not coming to the survey of the galaxy. Yeah. Yeah.
To properly account for this, do you need to sort of like start adding all of those parameters into your bits whenever you're trying to determine something like the spectral index or the sigma 8 or neutrino masses? I mean,
you can do it that way. What I think is a maybe a better approach is to actually, you can determine, since when you do a galaxy survey, you get a lot more information than just the power spectrum. And so you can determine some of these complicated bias parameters by looking at other things, like looking at relative bias, by looking at maybe three-point function. You can measure these with a lot of the other information that you get, and then fix those into your parameter analysis, and you fit with the power spectrum.
Thanks very much.